joined today by Catherine Watt, a Pennsylvania paralegal and law researcher who has done some of the most comprehensive presentations that I have seen and collected all of that evidence on her Substack about how this entire agenda comes together, how they have, what laws they have brought in to put us under military medical martial law. This is a term that Todd Callender used with us some time ago, and we know that that is absolutely the case. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure and an honor to have you, Catherine. So before we get started into this, I mean, I haven't seen a presentation as comprehensive as yours, to be honest with you, on this subject. I think you've done a phenomenal job in putting it all together, and a lot of research has gone behind this. I encourage people to go and look at your Substack, which we will take a look at today. But before we get into it, just a little bit of background about you, and how did you actually become aware of all of this information?
I became aware of it through Todd. In 2020 and 2021, I was just watching everything happen and trying to figure it out. I was watching some of the court cases. I was watching the executive orders that were happening in Pennsylvania from our governor and how that was being implemented by the schools and the hospitals. And then I couldn't figure out why the constitutional cases kept getting thrown out and why people weren't challenging the like executive orders as overreach. And then when I heard Todd's interview on Elizabeth Leave Leet's Truth for Health at the end of January 2022, so about a year ago, he talked about the World Health Organization International Health Regulations of 2005 as like the cornerstone that they had then been implemented in all the different countries. And so after that interview, I tracked down the citations of what he had talked about, and then I kept digging further and tracking down other things, and I've been doing that for about a year now.
And you've done a phenomenal job. So I want to talk about the international health regulations today, because they're trying for dear life to update these, and we saw in recent times that they were, you know, removing human dignity, fundamental freedoms, and human rights from them, or proposing to. We had some pushback, so they've released their final report. It looks like the committee was uncomfortable with that wording, would you believe? But they haven't made a decision yet. So now is the time to increase that awareness and push back against that. So I guess, do you want to start there, or do you want to give us more of an overview of how we actually got here? Because this goes back far, far before the amendments of 2005 to the IHR.
Yes. I mean, we can start there. I don't focus as much specifically on the WHO and the IHR as Jim Roguski does. For my timeline purposes, it's one of the pieces, and he focuses on what they're doing now and what they like much more in the detail. So wherever you want to start is fine.
All right. Well, in a recent presentation, I saw you talking about laws that were enacted all the way back in the early 1900s that sort of started to lead to this. So let's start there.
Okay. So I think the first one that's particularly significant is the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, which was how the Federal Reserve Bank was created. And that was followed up by things like the Social Security Act, and even before that, the Shepard-Townsend Maternity Act, I think it was called. All of those were sort of pieces in commodifying the people of the United States as financial instruments that could be traded and used as collateral on international financial markets. And I'm just now, after having looked into especially the public health law structures in the United States from mostly from the 1930s and 40s up until now, I'm just now starting to go back and try to track the Bank for International Settlements, which was created in 1930 as like it came alongside those things. Because it's, as I've been putting in presentations, it's like a two-track military and banking system of control for the people of the world by the central bankers.
Yes. So the past 3 years, everything that we've seen over the past 3 years and what we're still seeing now, what I found most compelling about what I've seen of your work is that this is a military operation, but you've actually explained how it's a military operation. So explain that to us. How is this actually a military operation?
So in 1944, Congress passed the Public Health Service Act, which set up the Public Health Service as a branch of the U.S. military. They did that at the time when, I think now looking back on what I've learned and what happened then, I think they were just, the central bankers were solidifying the gains they had made through the Holocaust and the orchestrated wars among the European powers, but also taking the military aspects of it a little bit underground. I think they were instrumental in what Hitler did with the concentration camps and the Holocaust, as far as using biological and chemical weapons and concentration camps. But it still was a little bit too obvious, because by the end of the war, most of the world knew about it. They had organized the Nuremberg trials. They had set up, people had tried to set up new biomedical ethics codes. So I think the lesson that the central bankers learned from World War II was how to make it even quieter, and do that by relabeling things that were military campaigns as pharmaceuticals and vaccines and treatments, and sort of shoving them through society as do this for civic duty, do this to protect your health, even though in many cases, I think those products have shortened people's lifespans, which was actually their goal. On the other side of it, I also think they have underestimated, and they still underestimate, human immune systems and human like ability to detoxify. Like, your liver can handle things in a way that I think they were not expecting, because even though they've been trying to kill off lots and lots of people for a very long time, population does still keep growing. And so that's very interesting to me.
Absolutely.
Especially, yeah.
There's something I want to ask you about, though, because you mentioned the biological and chemical weapons. I've taken note of something that you've said, which was there are different ways that they attack. So the biological and chemical aspect is only one part of this. What are the other ways that this military operation, or this kill box, which I'll get you to talk about in a second, what are the other ways that they're conducting this military operation?
I think the primary one is informational. That's why the censorship and the propaganda has been so important. And one component of that is the redefinition of terms. Like, they took the word vaccine and they changed the definition. They took the word immunity and natural immunity and herd immunity and they changed the definitions. They changed definitions of things like, it's a prohibited bioweapon unless it's being developed for defensive purposes or prophylactic purposes or protective purposes, and then it can be allowed. But that's a false redefinition, because they can't, there's nothing about it that, the chemical or the biological agent itself does not know the intent of the person who's using it. It's either going to be at a level or work in a way that's toxic and injures the person who gets it, or that person might be able to manage it or might not. But you can't have a program that is just for defensive purposes. And so that's part of the informational warfare, manipulation of public understanding of what's happening. And then the second layer is the psychological manipulation piece, where it's basically just terrorism. It's getting people to be very, very afraid of communicable diseases, of being in public settings with other people in social activities, getting people afraid to not comply with what the government is telling you to do. And that's as another way to like break down sort of human capacity for recognizing threats that are real and taking self-preservation acts. Like, people would have had a self-preservation instinct to not take these injections if that had not been overridden by, it's your civic duty, you should be very afraid, this is the thing that's going to save you, the government is your friend. So those are the two foundational things. And then the chemical and biological warfare part of it is just built on top of those, because you can't get people to throw away their ability to think about things and make their own value judgments unless you've like destabilized their information base and their emotional like processing base.
Yes, absolutely. And I love the way that you articulate this because we all understand to at some level that we're in a war,
Right.
but how that war is actually being conducted is different in this instance because it's
Yes.
fifth generation warfare. It's not the same as any other war that we've seen before.
Yeah, it's hidden. And that came up. I was thinking about it more after I did the one of the interviews or presentations I did last week. People in the Q&A after were like, I don't understand why everybody who could figure this out went along with it. Where are the patriots? Where are the people who believe in their civic duty? And I was thinking about it more yesterday, and I think that was planned for and preempted by saying, you do have a civic duty. You should feel good about the civic duty that you're doing by rolling up your sleeve and taking these injections. And it kind of short-circuited it in a way that people couldn't think of ahead of time calmly, like, what is my civic duty here? Is my civic duty to like stand up for my country's sovereignty, to stand up for individual sovereignty? They just like erased all of that personal value judgment part and said, no, we know what your civic duty is, and it's just go and get the shot, or just stay home, or just put on this mask, or whatever it was. So
Yeah, yes.
it is very interesting that they figured out the patriotism and civic duty and cut that off at the knees, and they figured out the self-preservation instinct and also cut that off at the knees.
I'm wondering, in your research, have you looked at how long they've actually been studying human behavior and how they've been studying it?
I have pulled some reports, like things like the Stanford or the Milgram experiments and the Stanford prison experiments, the Ash conformity experiments. Those were all being done around the 1940s and 50s. So yeah, I think that's where it, in a kind of complementary, mutually supporting way, they were figuring out the psychological manipulation stuff and the CIA MK Ultra things, and the part about preemptively marginalizing everybody who asks questions as being conspiracy theorists. That also was like the 40s, 50s, late 60s. So yeah, and then at the same time they were doing this like medical side with the vaccines and treatments and things like that.
Well, here's my concern, Catherine. We've got people that have absolutely been able to tap into not only human behavior, but human behavior specific to different countries because different tactics were used at
Yes.
different times with d depending on the culture of the people and how far they could push the people.
Right.
So, and what we saw was humanity, those that couldn't see past the propaganda, absolutely viciously turning on those that could, like we did in Nazi Germany. And the next time, because COVID was the test run, the
Was one
next
of many
time,
test runs,
one
yeah.
of, well, yes, one of many,
Yeah.
absolutely. The next time, the next pandemic, for example, if people don't find out, don't realize what you're saying, if they don't realize that they've been part of a military psychological operation,
Yeah.
we're in some deep water.
Yes, and that's why I think the information piece is the front line of, in a way, inoculating people now informationally so that they are not as susceptible to the propaganda of the next rounds.
It's funny you use the word inoculation because they
Yeah.
actually, in their propaganda pieces, they actually say we
Yeah.
need to inoculate against misinformation. They even use that
Right.
word.
I know.
It's
I know. And so
amazing.
it's this terrible process of like trying to reclaim words that they have stolen from us and then them pulling it back their way. And yeah,
Well,
it's,
I think that's vital. I think it's vital to reclaim
yeah.
words and reclaim the actual meaning of those words because the truth matters, but they know this and they know the power of words and they know that changing the meaning of a word will strip it of its power, which is why
Yes.
it is so crucial to battle about alongside with everything that we're doing, include that as well. I've just brought up this slide from your Substack. It's the Killbox presentation one that talks about a killbox is defined in Joint Publication Department of Defense Dictionary of Military and Associated Terms as a three-dimensional area reference that enables timely, effective coordination and controls and facilitates rapid attacks. Talk to us about the COVID-19 killbox, Catherine, because it really has been created as a military operation to trap the people and essentially kill them.
Yes. I got the term from Todd's presentation, again, about a year ago, and then I looked it up. And if you look at the term killbox in conjunction with the 2001 authorization for use of military force that the U.S. Congress and President Bush passed in September 2001, right after the 9/11 attacks, you can see how the COVID killbox makes a three-dimensional space that is a box around the entire planet, essentially, because the global war on terror was set up to be indefinite in length. There's no particular state actor or state that is the target of it. And all of the people in each country of the world are considered presumptive combatants because of the idea that terrorists can be embedded in cells and you wouldn't know them because they just spring out of nowhere and do their attacks. And it was crucial for the adoption of the laws that Congress did right after 9/11 for the anthrax attacks to have happened. And I think many people have reported that they probably originated in Fort Detrick or another Department of Defense chemical and biological weapons facility. So it's very clear that they needed to terrify Congress. And the other group that got the letters at that time were mainstream media outlets, which meant that they were also trying to terrify Congress to pass the laws and the mainstream media to beat the drums to get Congress to do that.
So every single country has implemented this tactic. How did they manage, Catherine, to get away with it in every single country? It's a US military, it's a DoD military plan. How did they manage to do this in every single country?
We're still trying to figure a lot of the details out. I thought when I found all of the paper trail in the US law that there would be parallel legal structures in all of the same countries, such that the effect of the 2005 IHR was not just that the United States put into place all these implementing laws about surveillance and quarantine and forced treatment, but other countries did too. I don't know, because I can't speak any other languages and I don't know any other legal systems, but I thought other people might find that. And it's turning out that most of the mechanistic parts of it are built into the contracts for the products that the DoD and the private or nationalized pharmaceuticals have produced. And people are starting to find that now, especially in Europe, that there's provisions in the contracts that kind of fold everything under the US PREP Act. And the US PREP Act is one of the key pieces of the American part. And I think they probably also say if there are disputes, they have to be heard in US courts. And that's a reflection of the same kind of model that the World Trade Organization did with trade disputes. And I can't remember what the name of the court is, but the World Trade Organization has its own arbitration court that subordinates member states' national interests to the World Trade Organization as a transnational organization. And then, so yeah, I think the coordination is in one way, just through the World Health Organization and the World Health Assembly, and in another way, through the contracts.
Well, that's very interesting, because if...
There's a third. Can I say one more?
Of course.
The financial coercion piece. The fact that the Bank for International Settlements owns all of the other central banks for each country and can control the flow of money and the creation of money and the debt instruments to force compliance, because if a country doesn't comply, they will lose access to international financial systems.
Well, and that's exactly what they've done with the Global Pandemic Fund. Every country's pulled
Yes.
their money into this, and they've been threatened with financial sanctions if next time there's a pandemic, if next time they don't comply with what the World Health Organization is asking. So this is how they
Yes.
and withhold medications from that country. So it's not just financial sanctions. That money is to access life-saving medications because they've all pulled their funds together. So if your country doesn't comply, the rest of the people don't get access to life-saving medications because the majority of the people haven't complied. So guess what happens to the
Right, you make a scapegoat situation in the each country. Yeah.
Yes, so
Yeah.
those people who can't get the access because of the ones who are the naughty ones who aren't listening will absolutely viciously turn on the people who aren't complying. And they're putting it again, like they did, Catherine, when they said here in Australia, I'm not sure how it happened in the United States, but in Australia, they said to businesses, well, the government's not mandating, but employers are mandating the injections. And
Yeah.
so they wiped their hands clean. And so employers ended up bearing the brunt of it. It'll be. And they made people police other people. Even in
Yes.
restaurants, you have to show your code. That's people policing other people.
But they did the same money trick with the employers too. Employers could get bonuses from the US government if they got like 90% or more injected, or 85% or more. They had benchmarks to hit. And if they wanted to get those payments from the government, they had to hit those benchmarks. And I think they're still going to have those. And I heard the other day in Brazil, because they just put in the child injection, lethal injection mandate in Brazil, they're going to cut people off from Brazil's version of food stamps if they don't get their kids injected.
Yes.
So it goes all the way top to bottom.
And the CDC's just added the COVID-19 injection to the childhood immunization schedule in the United States. The same thing will happen.
Yes.
Access to welfare will not be possible without the injections. Today it's COVID-19. Tomorrow it'll be whatever the next thing they concoct is. This is an ongoing plan,
Right.
which
And I
is.
saw a really good graphic a few months ago that had the CDC recommendation and then the school districts, and just arrows in both directions saying, because then they can both defer to the other. The CDC, like you said, says, oh, it's not us, it's the school board districts. And the school districts say, it's not us, the CDC recommended it. And both of them can just do this. And everybody standing around watching is like, who do we go to say, don't do it? And they're like, there's nobody.
And I suppose the problem is our inaction over the years, Catherine, because in Australia they did this some time ago with a no jab, no play policy, and it affects childcare, kids going to childcare, for example, or parents accessing childcare benefits or family tax benefits. And so many people complied at that time. Had we spent more time researching this back then, surely there would have been more pushback back then. Had we known that this was the beginning of a
Right.
global depopulation plan, and you call it no jab, no play. It's
Right.
th this was all part of it.
And that's why the incrementalism was so important to them. And that's why I think COVID-19, they took a slightly bigger step than they had prepared the ground for, so that now people can see a thing that they could not see before, and they can see the pattern. Like, I mean, to some extent, you can say, yes, it would be nice if people had seen 20 years ago that this is where it was going. But 20 years ago, we didn't have it in our faces the way it is now, because they were very good at keeping it low key and marginalizing people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Del Bigtree, and saying, oh, those stupid anti-vaxxers. And now we can see it. And so I hesitate to sort of put the burden on people for not seeing it sooner, because it was so well hidden.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you. I think all the more reason to not be absorbed in the things of the world right now. And when I say the things of the world, I mean worldly things. And really immerse ourselves in what I think is a spiritual battle, because it is, and it always has been. Before we talk about the sort of the steps that are more obvious now and next steps and these sorts of things, I want to go back to this thing that you said about contracts, because this might be a huge key for countries to defeat this? If it's hidden within the contracts that, are you saying that countries have made with the United States or in conjunction with Pfizer, or specifically Pfizer and Moderna? And we'll talk about how they're just the scapegoats themselves. But is that what we're saying, Catherine? The contracts countries have made with the pharma companies?
Yes, that's what it looks like, especially just within the last couple of weeks. Sasha has found through her, I think, German contacts, located the provisions in the EU contracts that Ursula von der Leyen sort of forced on all of the member states that have the kinds of language that we've found in US statutes with countermeasures and things like that. So it's a multi-party contract between the EU, the manufacturers, and the DOD, as far as I can tell, because of the way that the contracts for production of the bioweapons were DOD, their ATI, the like kind of a bundler. I don't know. They're like an intermediary corporation that handles defense contracting for the DOD, and then Pfizer and Moderna and the other subcontractors as the other party.
Who did you say was the intermediary?
ATI, I think it's Advanced Technology International, and then ANSER, ANSER. There's another acronym for them. I mean, that's an acronym, and I can't remember exactly what it stands for. But those two, ATI and ANSER, are seem to be the biggest, like I said, intermediaries. They like run the consortia, or the collection of defense contractors, and handle drafting template contracts for each particular weapons production run.
Weapons production run as in the injections?
As in the injections, but also they're the same companies that do more traditional weapons contracts.
Which is, I mean, astounding that a company that does traditional weapons contracts would also be managing what's been told to the world is medication. I mean, just think about that.
But part of that, that's another thing that I sort of stumbled across in the last week or so. The substitution of the term public health emergency preparedness for what used to be thought of as military readiness. And it's like an almost complete like overlay of the exact same models. They just took the military readiness model and said, instead of just having this apply to the military personnel, we're going to call it emergency preparedness, and it's going to apply to everybody, but it's still a military program.
Right. So the key may very well be in these contracts, Catherine, just going back to what we were saying before, because
yeah,
if, you know, we've tried the constitutional arguments, we've tried to expose Pfizer. We have exposed Pfizer. We have exposed the human rights violations. All of that has been exposed. If there, it would make sense that they would hide how they've legally done this. If people can access those contracts and show that that is a legal violation, perhaps that is the way to topple this. Is my thinking along the right lines?
Yeah, I think it's one of the many ways to try to attack the same monster from many different directions. And I think I read yesterday or today, Costa Rica is right on the edge of possibly getting a judge, one of their federal Costa Rican judges, to pull harder on the contract and allow more argument about the ways in which the contracts were based on fraud or were overthrew or superseded national sovereignty. I don't know how far they're going to get with those arguments, but yes, it is one of the many ways that it's good to attack it.
Well, it's simply based on fraud. It would then nullify their indemnity.
Potentially, but yeah, they're because of the global martial law and the fact that propaganda has been pseudo-legalized around the world and in the United States since 2013, I think that the counter argument from the government is going to be, we had a right to lie because it's a state of war, and in a war you can use propaganda, you can use lies, you can commit fraud, and because we're a government, we're above that.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why when I write about the specific kinds of cases I focus on myself, I'm trying to split apart the people who work in government and have committed these crimes of fraud and orchestrated mass murder and separate them out from their official government function. Because if they can be split out, then yes, I think they lose all the immunities. They have to be split out and demonstrated to have been acting outside of their official government responsibilities as rogues, elements, as outlaws, as infiltrators, or seditious, or loyal to foreign powers, loyal to the Bank for International Settlements. But so long as it's a government committing the fraud, it seems like that's allowed. That's allowed. Government can do all kinds of things that ordinary people can't do.
Mm-hmm. How many people within government would be aware of this, Catherine?
Aware of?
Of what you're talking about now. Of the fact that they are undertaking a military operation against the people of the world. How many people would actually be aware of this in government?
I think it's probably in the hundreds that are actually aware of it. I think they coordinate through a committee called the Public Health Emergency Medical Countermeasures Enterprise, which is a coordinating committee of most of the cabinet agencies, the U.S. cabinet agencies, including DOD, HHS, USDA, which is our agriculture agency, the Department of Homeland Security. There's like about a dozen federal agencies that meet in this particular committee, the PHEMCE. And it is the same quasi-private, quasi-public structure as the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac organizations that contributed slash organized the great financial crisis of 2008, because they can do a lot in private under their private hat and get a lot of public money under the public side of their setup.
Right.
And I think that's where most of the coordination happens. And so it's those 12 or 15 people plus the other people in their agencies who are at the top and know what the whole overall plan is and how they're all supposed to maintain the fiction that it's a public health event to maintain the compliance and cooperation of the people below them in the organizational structure. Having said that, I also think the lower down ones know something is very, very wrong, and they've known it for a long time, because they know that none of the things that would have happened in an ordinary drug review process happened, and lots of lower level people signed off on it, even though they knew that it was completely, completely messed up.
Go on.
No, they may not have known like the overall plan from the beginning, but they knew that what they were participating in, after a few months, they would have known, in the exact same way that Brooke Jackson knew and the exact same way that Sasha Lachipova knew, this is criminal, this is wrong, this is the same way that Mike Eden knew. Like, he could see, I have been in this industry for 30 years, none of this makes any sense. But all those people kept their mouths shut in a way that Mike Eden and Brooke Jackson and Sasha did not keep their mouths shut.
Yes. And you know, even looking in previous times in history, where you've had a handful of brave people stand up and the rest just watch the atrocities. I mean,
right.
Again, Nazi Germany is the closest example that we have of this, where people would be singing louder as the trains were going past so that they wouldn't have to, you know, they'd be in church. Singing louder so that they wouldn't have to hear the screams of the people in the trains. I mean, it is
right.
Horrific what people will watch, will stand by and watch and pretend isn't happening, Catherine.
Yes.
And they know it.
And they know it, but at the same time, that's what I was talking about at the beginning, where they were offered at the very beginning a prepackaged way to justify their silence, by saying, well, it is a public health emergency. It is an unprecedented, novel, communicable disease. It is your civic duty to go along with this, because you will be helping by getting this product rolled out really, really fast. I think that excuses some of them for some period of time, but definitely not since all of the information came out in VAERS and the other databases of adverse effects, because once that became clear, and it also became clear that the CDC and the FDA were not ever going to acknowledge that or change course, nobody who was involved in the like keeping the trains running aspect had any basis to continue keeping quiet. It was not
Absolutely.
about civic duty. They should have been able to see that their civic duty to blow the whistle was higher than their civic duty to like be a good helper in this national emergency of health related pretext.
Absolutely agree. And this is why we said recently, you know, it really is time for retribution. I want these people to publicly, I want to publicly state to all of these people that took part in this and didn't speak out. And you know, first of all, orchestrated it. Second of all, those who knew what was going on and didn't say a word. Retribution is coming because we are not going to give up. We are going to push to hold these people accountable. It's no longer just about, you know, exposing what's gone on. We know what's gone on, albeit your dig is a lot deeper than most. But we know what's gone on. We know we're at war. The time is coming for retribution. That's it. It's enough. We're going to hold you accountable. But here's what happens, Catherine, and you've written about this. All of the anger gets pointed towards Pfizer, Moderna, and then this gets exposed, that gets exposed, and nothing happens. Why?
Why do they do that distraction game? To throw people off the scent of the people who are actually running the program so they can continue running the program and not stop. That's.
So Pfizer, excuse me, taking down Pfizer isn't going to take down the entire establishment. It will help though,
No, it will help.
but is there a way if the contracts are essentially the world gov the governments of the world with the DOD, the US DOD, I mean, is the US DOD in these contracts? Have we found that at all yet?
Yeah,
They are.
they are.
Perfect. So the I mean not perfect perfect that we've found that out not that it's happening so the governments of the world have signed a military operation contract with the United States Department of Defense. How does taking down Pfizer and Moderna stop that? It doesn't.
It doesn't.
It
And
doesn't mean we don't go after them, but it doesn't stop that. Sorry, go on.
No, it we do still go after them, and we also keep focus on the people higher up the chain than Pfizer, higher up the chain than Moderna. I forgot what I was going to say.
So we focus on the people higher up the chain than these guys, but.
We just keep going after both and not getting derailed onto the side tracks of it's just Pfizer. Oh, rebranding. That's what I was going to say. Pfizer could be taken down and would just rebrand and be like a different company that would still be a government contractor and would still be in biotech and would still produce whatever weapons, next generation weapons they want them to produce. The one of the reasons I think that it's so important for the actual architects of the mass murder to deflect attention from the DOD is because once the US government is seen as the perpetrator, the institutional perpetrator, you can't rebrand it, or it's very difficult to rebrand it because it's the US government. You don't just fold it and then make a new US government, although that may end up being one form of how it gets resolved. And that ties in with what I was saying about like splitting out the criminal elements of the US government from the non-criminal elements and cutting loose the criminal elements so that the non-criminal elements can rebuild from the Constitution, from the laws prohibiting bioterrorism and chemical terrorism and murder and all of those things. But yeah, they are trying to protect the brand of the US government as the world's police, the world's economic engine, all of those things.
All the while trying to collapse it. I want to ask you the steps that they have, the next steps that they have outlined in their plans. We know that it's going to be a continuous pandemic cycle because they need to empower the World Health Organization further to enact this medical martial law in a permanent state, which is what the international health regulations and the amendments to that and the treaty are about. That is a permanent medical dictatorship run by the WHO, who again isn't at the top of the food chain, but they'll be the ones, you know, at the face of it
administratively.
Yes, correct. So that is one of the most crucial things that we need to stop. If apart from that, we've also got the climate agenda, we've also got the collapse of the financial system and distractions and God knows what with the UFOs that we're seeing. So supposed UFOs, right?
Yeah.
So the propaganda I'm expecting, Catherine, is going to increase. The distractions are going to increase. The confusion element is going to increase. What else can we expect from this military operation that people need to prepare themselves for?
I think Todd Callender's way of approaching, one of his ways of approaching it is useful, sort of telling people ahead of time from our side, we know that this is what they're going to do. They're going to come out and say this terrifying, terrifying new thing is here. You must be afraid. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Make all your decisions based on how afraid you are. Run into the camps that they're going to set up or have set up and get your injection and get your food supplies and get whatever. And Sasha talks about this too, diffusing that fear. And she's really good at it. She's really good at pointing out that they have not come up with a way to actually engineer pathogens that get more lethal and more transmissible as they circulate. They can make a localized severe outbreak that kills the people right around where it's distributed, but they can't actually make a global pandemic in a real way because our immune systems, God-given, are so good, and because our livers and kidneys and detox systems, God-given, are also so good. So the more we can, as I said earlier, like preemptively get people to not be afraid, to be not afraid, that really messes with the plan because they need everybody to be terrified to make all of the other pieces work.
Yes. And on messing with the plan, you mentioned recently, in a presentation, the top few things that they hate when the people go after. So just talk to us about that, because what are they and why do they hate it?
Well, they hate people who have a moral commitment to something bigger and more divine than the Bank for International Settlements and the World Health Organization. So being a part of a religious community and having a religious faith that is based on God, worship of divine, not based on worship of technocrats or technocratic programs like AI or whatever, is very, very useful. They don't like federal constitutions and federal charters, like Canada's Charter of, I forget what it's called. I think it's called the Charter of Rights. But lots of countries have those kinds of common law documents, founding documents, that say these are the rights that people have against the government. And one of the books I started reading is The Tower of Babel, Adam Labore. It's a book about the Bank for International Settlements. And right at the beginning, when they founded it, they specifically intended it to be not at all, or set up completely outside national governments and national political systems. And some of the people involved in starting it were like, that doesn't make any sense. You have to, the one thing a government needs to have is its own freedom of movement, freedom of action to like protect its own people and protect its own interests. But the BIS supersedes that through the financial mechanisms. So to the extent that people can stay loyal to their own constitutions and support the judges and lawmakers who stay loyal to the constitutions. That is another thing that the globalists hate a lot. They're trying to kill those things. They're trying to kill our loyalty to our own countries. They're trying to kill our loyalty to our own founding social contracts. And then from there going down, it's the same thing. Like if you are in a state or a province, like Alberta just did that thing last month where they said within our borders, the federal or the national Canadian system has certain limits that we're going to protect our people against it, their own federal government. So in the United States, that's Article 10 kind of activity where the state lawmakers pass laws that block the effect of federal programs within those state borders. And then you just keep taking that down level by level.
And they hate they well, but before I get to this point, you just said they kill our loyalties to our own countries, and they have, and even the people that so love their country and are the biggest patriots have grown to despise it because of everything that they see that's going on. Don't let that happen. Don't
Don't let
let
that
that
happen.
happen because
That's
they
very important.
Yes, absolutely. They want to kill your patriotism and make you think that this is how it's going to be forever and your country is dead. And you just have to remember that that is part of the psychological aspect of this. Your country is not lost, and we will keep fighting for our countries. We're not going to allow them to remove our patriotism. So super, super crucial info there, Catherine. Now you
And
said
they
that.
want to do that. They want to do that because they want us to be compliant with their effort to roll in the one world
Yes.
government as the substitute. That's
Yes.
the reason for it. But yeah.
Yes, and then they'll go and they'll destroy the middle levels of government will be destroyed, and that's why they've behaved like such buffoons for 3 years, because they want the
Yeah.
people to hate that middle level. The local
Yes.
councils are now being empowered to for within these 15-minute cities. They'll be like the New World Order goons on the ground, policing the people within these little ghettos, reporting to the top of the food chain. So you never get access to the top of the government. That's how they want this to function. It is it's so despicable what they're doing, but this is why the local level, what you said there, is so important, Catherine, because people need to now at the local level, and Aman Jabi, former Silicon Valley engineer, talks about this a lot. He's been on with me. He talks about at the local level, you need to, number one, form those communities. Number two, as you said, support those people who are still in roles where they can make a difference. Support them with your whole heart, soul, and community spirit. because they're gonna matter. Just talk to us a little bit about that.
That's people like your county in the United States, your county sheriff, your county commissioners, your county district attorneys, your county judges. Because they can set up firewalls, and the firewalls likely at the beginning of this chaotic whatever this next phase is going to be. The firewalls are going to elicit from the higher ups cutting your county off from the state money. Or if you set up a firewall at the state level, it's going to cut the state off from the federal money for Social Security, for food stamps, for Medicare, for Medicaid, all of those things. If the resistance can be sustained long enough to set up alternative financial systems at the county and state level, I mean, we could say some states are already preparing for this. They're setting up state sovereign banks and they're setting up state bullion depositories, and they could be setting up state currencies too. All of those signs will be taken by the globalists as signs of resistance, which they are, and they will be punished. But they can't be punished forever, and they can't be punished in a sustainable way, if those initial resistant counties and states generate momentum for other counties and states to follow the same path of disengaging from the financial coercion mechanisms and setting up their own financial systems to keep their own economies going and their own people fed and housed. So I don't know if that
That is
answered your
no,
question.
it's a perfect answer, and it's exactly what the people need to hear, Catherine, because we have to face that there is an enemy out there that wants us dead.
Yes.
And if we don't face that, we will not adequately prepare for what is coming. These people want
Right.
to harm us. They want us under their thumb. If we don't submit to their control, they will come after us. It is that simple. Let's not beat around the bush or sugarcoat
No.
this. But if we know that and accept that now, we are able to start setting up systems to protect ourselves from what is coming and potentially win this thing as you're talking about. Because if all of
Right.
the, you know, I'm not, I wonder what the Australian equivalent of what you're talking about is. And if there are Aussies watching, and you know what the Australian equivalent is, let me know. Contact me on the website, on zmedia.com. Go to the contact section, share a story or whistleblower. If you're from one of these organizations that you can
Yeah.
make a difference, you know, for the Australian equivalent of that. If you're watching from another country, have a look at how what Catherine's talking about would function elsewhere. I mean, just a little bit more detail, Catherine, if you don't mind, before we wrap up. So you've got, let me make sure I understand. You've got the county sheriff, obviously, and I've heard about this before in the United States, that person is the person that can arrest the criminals in government, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, but the problem is a good resource for this is Matthew Truhella, and I think that's his name. The Doctrine of Lesser Magistrates.
Yes.
The county sheriffs can do it, but a lot of the county sheriffs have been retrained or psychologically manipulated or financially coerced or some combination of those things through the things like the training exercises that the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security have been putting out since the mid-2000s, saying in this kind of public health emergency, you're no longer a county official. You're no longer a constitutional official. It's a martial law situation, and you are just the you are subordinated to the federal military, and your job is to implement the federal military program. So for each county, there's like I think there's like 3,000 counties in the country. There's like 60 of them in Pennsylvania. For each county, there's a county sheriff, and he or she has to pick a side. They have to decide if they are going to be constitutional sheriffs, which is what they're called, the ones here that are getting organized, that are loyal to the Constitution and will not go along with this medical martial law program, or if they are going to go along with it. And depending on where you are and what your particular sheriff's political allegiances or ideologies are, you will be faced with a different type of situation. I happen to be in one where he's an extremely conflicted person. Like, he can see it from both sides. He has told me that he's not going to get off the fence until they start trying to collect guns door to door. And I have said to him, that's way too late.
Way too
Like,
late.
way too late. Like, it's great that we have guns. It's great that you think that the Second Amendment is important, but they have already gone so far down this path. You have to take the stand now. You have to start taking the stand now. You're already like 2 years late, 3 years late. So yeah, that I don't know. Did that
And
answer your
you know
question?
what? We can't beat around the bush with these people, Catherine, because the reality of the situation is so severe and
Yeah.
so dangerous that there's no use in trying to stop, you know, avoid hurting people's feelings. I'm not saying let's go out and insult everyone. I'm saying let's tell them the truth and tell them you're literally in the middle of a war that the government has unleashed on you and they want you dead. Are you going to fight or are you going to wait until you're dead? Those are your options.
Those are your options, yes. And that goes back to the inoculating people against the demoralization. It's important for the globalists to make us think it's all inevitable. It's important for them to make us think that the time to fight is already gone and we missed it. And we did
Yes.
not miss it. The time to fight has been presented every day for the last 3 years, and it's still being presented every day now. And if you're not demoralized, there's a crap ton of stuff you can do, but you have to start by not being afraid and not being demoralized and not accepting their framing of it as inevitable. It's extremely inevitable. It's extremely stoppable.
And I think if people are working with local councils, if people are working with their local, their county sheriff, if they work on the local level, because they're so afraid of community, Catherine. They're so afraid of people working together. If the people
Yes.
that know what's going on start to form these groups at the local level, they can push back. And you may even have states that are operating outside of the New World Order system. Will it be forever? I don't know, but it will at least thwart their attack on those people's lives within that place. Wow. Amazing information, Catherine. This is such, you've done great work. Your acceptance of the reality of the situation and your ability to think clearly through it is just astounding. I'm really, really grateful. For anyone who hasn't seen Catherine's Substack, I'll bring it up right now for you. It's baileywicknews.substack.com. Fantastic research pieces. She's got her slideshows available there as well for people to view. A few last words, Catherine, before we wrap up.
Be not afraid. That's the big one. Just keep praying and keep putting your faith where it belongs. Not in the one world government, but in God. That's
Amen.
it.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you so much, Catherine, for your time. I'm sure we'll have you back on. If you're watching this on Rumble and you haven't subscribed to this channel yet, please do so. Give it a like, share it around. And of course, the link we prefer people share is zmedia.com so that if we get shut down anywhere, people know where they can find us. God bless you all. Stay strong and never let the tyrants rule your mind. Thank you again, Catherine.
Thank you.
The New World Order has openly declared war on the free people of the world, and now they're telling us to expect catastrophic cyber attacks over the next 2 years. Weather events, no power, grids down, mobile cell services out. Contact your loved ones anywhere, anytime with the satellite phone store. The Bivvy is a revolutionary GPS-based device which allows you to send SMS messages via your phone even if you have no mobile or cell service. Galileo will ensure you always stay in contact with Z Media, other trusted information sources, and your loved ones that can update you in real time in the event of an emergency. Don't be caught out and unprepared for the unprecedented times we are living in. Stay 10 steps ahead through secure, encrypted communication. Visit sat123.com/Maria and prepare yourself and your loved ones now.